Fugitive. An SAV production. Starring Kitty and Bobby as the host. Freed by fate to pursue an in-depth discussion of television's finest dramatic series ever. A Fugitive.
And welcome back once again. At long last, everyone anxiously awaiting the return of Talkin' Fugitive, and it is with Kitty and Bobby and Ken, who unfortunately was left out of that intro. But tonight we are going to be, if memory serves me correct, it's going to be program two on part one of The Judgment. And to start things off, as usual, here is Bobby Neer.
Okay, thanks, Dave. We have a lot of ground to cover tonight, so let's get started. But before we do get started, we have an email to read from one of our original members, one of our international members, and that's Helen in England. And it deals with a scene we talked about in our last program. Helen writes, "I've been enjoying the shows on The Judgment. If I remember correctly, you're still discussing the scene in Gene's apartment. Kimball is watching the TV news, and a reporter is talking about Kimball. I love the way Gerard is standing next to him, squirming as if to show that he's not used to being on TV. Gene starts to talk to Kimball, and he turns the TV off midway through the report about him. Gene asks, doesn't he want to watch it, and he says they've been running the same report all day. I found it surprising that he doesn't want to watch to see if there are any updates on him. He's more interested in sitting down to have his steak. It's all quite sad compared to how vigilant he was in the past. Best wishes, Helen." Well, let me just say this about that. Helen makes an excellent point, and we'll talk about this a little later in this program, but I believe this is all part of a deliberate conspiracy on the part of the writers to convince everybody that Kimball is fed up with running and he's simply not going to do it anymore, that he's losing interest. And I find that absolutely ridiculous. But we'll get into that a little bit more in a few minutes. Thanks very much, Helen. We appreciate the email. Well, it's been a while, but when we last left off on our last show, before the holidays, we had Jean Carlisle bringing Kimball back to her apartment so we could hear a long, boring story about her family. This went on way too long. And as time crawled by, it was apparent that Miss Jean was beginning to have some heart palpitations over the good-looking fugitive staying with her. As for me, I was getting progressively more nauseous. After Kimball thought it over for a while and apparently realized that even the electric chair was better than spending the rest of his life with Jean, he decides to turn himself into Gerard while Johnson is still in custody. The problem is that Jean, who works at the courthouse, just happens to be in the room when a sleazy bail bondsman is putting up $3,000 to get Johnson a get-out-of-jail, not-so-free card. Unfortunately, Kimball has already left her apartment and is on his way over in a cab. Wonder Woman manages to save him at the last minute, though, just as he pulls up in front of the building. Then we have a really tedious scene with the bail bondsman and Johnson talking in the zoo, and two detectives following them, and Kimball and Jean following them all. The whole thing looks ridiculous and comes to nothing. In fact, all of this is coming to nothing at the end of part one, but we'll get to that in our next show. But I've thought it over, and the fact is, before we ever get there, we have at least two chances right here for an awesome chase sequence. One in front of the courthouse and one in the zoo. In front of the courthouse, the bail bondsman and Johnson get in a cab or car and go off somewhere to talk to each other. And they're followed by two detectives in a car right behind them. Kimball shows up in a cab just 30 seconds later once they've pulled away. But what would have happened had Kimball pulled up while they were walking out of the courthouse or getting in the car? What would he have done? Would the running armed man have bolted and run down the street? Would Kimball have run after him? Could he afford to do that? Then in the zoo, the same story is there. Kimball and Jean are standing off to the side, and they see the two talking to each other on the bench. What if the one-armed man sees Kimball there? Will he run away there? And what this all means to me is that the writers have absolutely no intention of making a good chase scene either at the end of part one or anywhere before that, because there are opportunities everywhere. Kitty, what do you think about this?
Oh, I would agree. I don't know that I was as disappointed as you were that there was no chase scene, but I certainly think at least a chase scene, you're right, at the police station or in the zoo could have been interesting. I think it might have been more interesting if we had seen one at the zoo. Anybody who's ever been to the zoo, I think, would find that an interesting place to have a chase.
Indeed.
You know, I don't really have that much of a problem with it, but I do agree that, you know, we have a lot of intrigue here, a lot of setup, and you're right, not a lot really happens. I mean, we witness a conversation between Fred Johnson and the bail bondsman, and the bail bondsman basically telling him that, you know, there's money, where the money came from, there's probably more money to be had. And so you see the beginnings of this kind of scheme launched. But otherwise, nothing else really happens of significance there.
But, you know, I apparently the writers believed that it was somehow going to be exciting for viewers if we just saw Kimball standing off on the side in the zoo or pulling up in a cab so that she can tell him just in time that one armed man has been bailed out, there's no point in turning himself in now, that would be enough for us. It's not enough for me. It's not exciting enough. Ken, what are your thoughts on this?
I'm disappointed with the whole written story in part one. And, you know, the members on our Yahoo group even agreed with us as far as rating this episode. I mean, I think it got a 5.8 or a 5.9 rating out of 10.
Right.
And I gave it a less rating. I gave it a 3.
Right.
Because you're right. I mean, the whole episode has so many chances to really make this an intriguing final. And the writers and the producers, they just blew it. They just absolutely collapsed because they focused too much time on Jean Carlisle, giving her way too many lines, way too many screen time. I mean, they go to the zoo, and they're walking around, and then she kind of gets closer and closer, and Kimbo is gushing, and his face is turning pink, and we're watching the final, and this is what we see. And then they showed a picture of a bear. I just cracked up laughing. They show the bear at the L.A. Zoo. You know, Bob, I've been to the L.A. Zoo.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I've been there, and, you know, watching the scenes, oh, you're right. I mean, what a climactic moment it would have been if somehow get rid of the detectives. Maybe Jean distracts the detectives. And Kimball gets the one-armed man. Maybe he goes over to the bathroom to get a drink of water, and Kimball confronts him and says, all right, what's going on? This is the moment. And then it could have run through the zoo and all that. The writers, what's going on?
Well, and let's not forget, too, that back, you know, we later see the scene back at Jean's apartment after all of this transpires, where it's the middle of the night and Jean gets out of bed and she opens up her door and looks out and sees Kimball pacing the floor.
Yeah.
I really didn't see any reason for that. I mean, I guess this was the closest thing you could show to them having a love scene back then, but it was totally unnecessary.
Well, all during this episode, here's the problem. Kimball appears to be not quite up to his usual game, and that is that this man will do anything to prove he's innocent. There's no way he's going to turn himself in. There's no way you're going to capture him. And we've seen that for 4 years now. You can't just ignore that at this point. Now you get to this story, and if the writers wanted to show that after 4 years, any human being would just be worn down to a frazzle and not be able to do it any longer, they should have started it about 5 episodes ago. Just like Ken has said repeatedly, there should have been not a 2-part finale, but like a 6-part finale. Started at the beginning and have Kimball talk to Donna and say that he just can't do it any longer. And then by the time you get here, then we would say, you know, he's right. We've watched him for several weeks now, and he's out of it. He's not his usual self.
But
then all of a sudden, you get to this episode, and he's doing completely irrational things. For instance, we talked several weeks ago about the scene back in the produce market where he stares at the cops as he was getting in the car. And now you have these scenes here in which he makes himself quite obvious. How about standing with the Gene in the zoo? There's two detectives standing right there. I mean, he's just standing out in the open. He's not even hiding behind anything. Nobody in their right mind would do that. He would never do that. I'm sitting here watching them going, have you lost your mind? You're just going to stand there like that? First of all, why are they even in the zoo? I don't know. What do they hope to find out? How are they going to know what Johnson and the bail bondsmen are talking about? They don't have a microphone on them, so they're just standing there staring at him. Oh, they're sitting on the bench talking. And what are they talking about? I don't know. So there's no point in even being there. It's a complete waste of time, and he's simply putting his life in danger. It doesn't make a bit of sense. And then, of course, we have the bail bondsman and Johnson talking on the bench, something about getting more money, and the whole thing is just, it's so convoluted. And get rid of all this junk and just get down to the basics. And they're trying to create some sort of mysterious story. They're trying to fool us into thinking, you know what? Maybe the one armed man didn't do it after all. Maybe somebody else did it. But it's not real. It looks phony. It looks like the red herring that it really is. It's just a lot of baloney. And nobody who's been watching this series from the very beginning is going to believe any of this. It's just completely ridiculous. And then, of course, we also have this scene in the bail bondsman's office. When they go back there and they continue their talk, I believe this is after the zoo, and Kitty, remember the scene where the one-armed man, I believe, turns towards the window and he says that he didn't kill Helen Kimball, but he knows who did. Remember that?
Right, yes.
Right. And then, is that the point right there where Leonard Taft's name comes up?
No.
No, it's later when Gene and...
Oh, when they go back.
Gene,
oh, okay.
And she finds the paper with his name on it.
Right. So he's in there, and at that point, I mean, if I want to believe it, you know, I'm thinking to myself, because when you think back, you know, the truth of the matter is, Ken, we never really do see, during the whole 4 years, we never really do see the one-armed man kill anybody, right? We only see him out in the street, isn't that right?
We never
right,
saw...
Right, and even the narrator at the beginning of the series, I mean, he never says that the one-armed man killed Helen. All he says is Kimball saw the one-armed man
exactly.
From his house. That doesn't automatically mean
right.
That he did it.
Right, and they, so there would have been an opportunity there to create a lot of doubt in viewers' minds, but I think they really butchered it. They didn't really follow up on it. They just let it kind of hang there for 4 years. They just let it as if to say, well, look, you're going to have to follow this series to find out if he really did it or not. But that's, you know, and so now they get to the end of it. Now they're trying to create this conspiracy. Uh-oh, somebody else is in it. And I think by this time, it simply does not work. It's utterly ridiculous. Let's go back for a second to Jean's apartment before any of this happens, when she's in there with Kimball, and she gets a visit by Gerard, who comes to talk to her. And that's another scene that should have been much better than it was. She simply denies that she knows anything about the case at all or has any idea who Richard Kimball is, as if he's going to believe any of that. Kitty, did that scene do anything for you?
Let me interject here and take a break. I can't wait to go and listen to this Gene Carlin. She really sounds like a fascinating individual.
Oh, yeah.
We're gonna take a quick time out, and we will come back, talk a little more Fugitive on the other side of this quick time out here on ShareVision Radio.
Hear the music you love from the past. All the memories you cherish will last. Listen and you'll agree, it's the place you wanna be. It's KSAV. Never far away, at work or at play. Hear the sounds that you love every day. We play the sounds of today and yesterday, so stay with KSAV. Whether on the go or in your home, you'll hear songs of yesterday. KSAV, we'll be with you to warm the day in every way. So share the music of KSAV. Listen to us, we know you'll agree. It's the place you
me for songs that fill the day. It's KSAV. Stay with KSAV.
Okay, and we are back talking a little more about the fabulous episode of The Judgment, talking Fugitive, and with some important announcements. Here is Bobby Neer.
Thanks, Dave. Our next program will be the fourth and final part of Part 1 of The Judgment. Then we will move on to Part 2. However, there will need to be another four-week break because of some other commitments to KSAV. I don't know, I think Dave's going on vacation or something. So our next program will be 4 weeks from tonight, Tuesday, February 10th, 4 weeks from today on Talking Fugitive. We also want everyone to know that our fourth and final Fugitive Views and Reviews book, Volume 4, will very, very soon be available to purchase. As a matter of fact, just before the show, I got the word that it will be available as of February 2nd. Is that right, Ken?
Absolutely.
All right. Our biggest, at twice the size of the others, and our best yet, containing reviews of Season 4, final poll results from all 4 years, two original stories by Kitty, plus even some comments from some of our longtime members, make this a must-have, plus a very exciting and awesome front cover photo from the most exciting moment of the entire series. You might think that after more than 5 years of doing that, we would be eager to take a long vacation, but no, we never learn. So just the other day, we started a new Yahoo discussion group about TV's other masterpiece, The Twilight Zone. We intend to do the same thing over there, only this will take more than 6 years. We've gotten off to a great start, and our membership is growing fast. If you want to be a part of it, just visit our Fugitive group, where you will find a link to it, or check out Yahoo groups where we are listed. The name of our new group is The Twilight Zone Revisited and Reviewed. More than 150 reviews posted twice a month begins Monday, January 19th. And there is a rumor floating around that it is just possible that after we finish up here in the spring, after 3.5 years, we may move on to do a similar show on The Twilight Zone. Just a rumor right now, and we will have more to say on this later on. So, back to The Judgment, and as we approach the end of the episode, there is a very interesting and idiotic scene here, and that is when Gene and Kimball go investigating. This is, I believe, after the zoo and that whole business, and they go to the bail bondsman's office, where they find him dead on the floor. He's been beaten to death, and first of all, it's insanity for Kimball to even go there. But he goes in there, and Ken, can you possibly count all of the things that he touches while he's in there?
No gloves, huh?
Unbelievable.
He's dead on the floor, right? The bail bondsman is
right.
Dead on the floor.
Yep.
And Kimball, I guess he checked, and then Gene is there. And I got to tell you, Bob, if you watch the scene closely, Kimball is gushing over Gene again. I see the pink face.
Yes.
You know, he's in love with her. So he's kind of baffled. Actually, he looks like a buffoon. He doesn't know how to do his own investigation. He has no clue what to do. Gene turns out to be the hero to find the note. And what's on the note and the big dramatic moment and this part one is coming to a close and the music sets the tone. They say Leonard Taff, and the whole audience is completely baffled and confused and nowhere, and we don't know what is going on. And what do you mean, Leonard Taff? You mean Donna's husband? And then Kimball, he kind of shakes a little bit, and oh, my God, then we have to go back to Gene's apartment. And, Bob, we got to talk about that kiss. You can't leave that kiss out. We've got to talk about it later.
Oh, I know. We'll get to it.
Okay.
If not today, then on our next show. But Kimball's in the office here, and here's a wanted man, to put it mildly, and he cannot afford to get in any more trouble. So he goes in there, and from the minute he walks in the door, he's just touching everything so that the cops can come along afterwards and go, oh, there's a dead guy on the floor? Kimball's bananas, his fingerprints? Oh, I knew he's going to kill again.
Well, not only is Kimball's fingerprints there, but Gene's fingerprints.
That's right.
There too. I mean, both of them are touching everything in that place. I mean, you would think that Kimball, since he's already been convicted of one murder, would not want to do anything to put any suspicion on him about another one. You know, I mean, that was the one thing that struck me about that scene. I thought, Kimball, what are you doing? You know, most people would just say, oh, my goodness, I think we'd better turn around and walk out of here. You know,
absolutely,
or at the
incredible.
Very least, go get some gloves.
Yeah. And let's not leave out one very important moment. After they do leave, we have a scene where the police show up in the office, and Gerard is with them, and there's very prominently a guy dusting for fingerprints. And they inform, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Kitty, but they informed Gerard that it was Kimball was almost certainly there. And I think that the other detective played by Joseph Campanella, doesn't he say something to Gerard about that? And Gerard immediately says that he doesn't believe that Kimball had anything to do with this killing.
Yeah.
And the cop says to him, why not? And what does Gerard say? I don't know. You know why he says I don't know? Because the writers don't know. Because the writers don't know what to write. So they give him dialogue that says, I don't think he did it, but I don't know why I think that. Excuse me, but he has chased him all over the country, and he doesn't know? Kitty, help me here.
Well, you know, keep in mind, there was another, wasn't there another episode in season 4 where Gerard had even said to somebody that no, Kimball only would kill that one time.
Yeah, probably, but I've tried to forget season 4
yeah.
desperately.
Yeah, I remember that episode. Yeah, he was on the rocks in the lake or something, and the other killer was roaming around. Yeah, I remember that episode, yeah.
So they're in the office, and his fingerprints are all over the place. Now, logic tells me that any man who's been chasing another man for years is going to go, I mean, if I can only tell you what I would do. If I was Gerard and I went in there, I'd be very smug about it, and I'd go, well, I've tried to tell everybody that this man is violent, and now here we are, and there's a dead man on the floor, and nobody would listen to me. Maybe now you'll listen to me. The man's fingerprints are all over the place.
Yeah, you would think that would actually kind of remove whatever doubts
Gerard
might be having at that moment, when you think about it.
Exactly.
But then it seems to raise more doubts with him.
Exactly. So, I mean, I would jump all over that, and I would say, I have nothing left to say on this. I mean, if there's a dead man on the floor and there's fingerprints from the two of these people right here, then what more do you need to know? Instead, Gerard stands, and what does this do? This harkens back to stuff we've seen earlier in this episode, and I know why the writers did it, because they're setting us up for part two, where Gerard, like magic, suddenly gets on Kimball's side. Now he wants to help him prove that he's innocent. He's starting to have doubts. I've got to tell you, you just can't do this. You know, I think what they didn't understand is that they're not presenting some sort of anthology series here. This is not a show like The Twilight Zone, where there are separate episodes every week.
Yeah.
This links from week to week to week, right, to week, even though guest stars come in and out all the time and stories begin and end. Ken, don't you agree that this is a continuing story?
Yes, you know, if you're a true Fugitive fan from the beginning, then you're really, really disappointed here, because you're right. I mean, I for me as a fan, I'm trying to piece the puzzle together.
Right.
You know, there's hints, you know, through the 4 years, especially season one.
Right.
You know, there's a hint. And then we get an episode, Trap of Fire, another hint. And
right,
then season three, we see the survivors,
right,
another hint on Helen. And so, yes, tie things together, be coherent, and be consistent, but don't just, you know, at this final, you know, you got millions of people across the country watching. The worst thing you can do as a producer and a director is to confuse the audience. And quite frankly, I was confused with the bail bondsman angle, and then, you know, did Leonard Taff, and then what's Johnson doing?
Yeah, all of a sudden there are suspects coming out from everywhere.
Yeah.
all these years there hasn't been anybody, and you got Gerard standing there saying, look, it's as plain as the nose on your face, the man did it. I mean, what do you want to know? He was convicted and everything, and now we're at the end of the series, and oh, what do you know? Maybe it's this guy, maybe it's that guy, maybe it's going to pass.
Only that, it flies in the face of logic, too, because in the episode Wife Killer, he asked Fred Johnson point blank if he killed his wife, and he nodded affirmatively.
Yes.
So it's like if you wanted to put seeds of doubt in anybody's mind, that would have been the place to do it, because then Kimball could have said, well, did you see who did it? And he could have nodded, you know, affirmatively on that if he had initially said, no, I didn't kill your wife. That could have been an interesting angle.
Let me go back to something that Ken said earlier, which was this business about Jean Carlyle being in this story too much. As far as I'm concerned, she shouldn't be in it at all. Okay, but they put her in there. Okay, so I could live with it. I could live with it if it's done right. But take note, even in the bail bondsman's office, when they find him dead, Kimball, aside from touching everything, is just standing there like a jerk. He's doing absolutely nothing. I mean, she's doing all the work. She finds the paper. It's in speed writing. She knows speed writing. She's able to read it. She does everything. I mean, what happened to him? Ken, what happened to the man who used to be his own best investigator? Why has he completely given it over to this woman? Is it that he's just love-struck? Is that it?
That's it. That's it. I'm convinced. He's gushing. You gotta watch it again. Watch that scene again. I'm not kidding, Bob. I mean it.
All right, I'll watch it later tonight. Yeah, I mean, and here's the joke. Don't you think that he's met a lot of women along the way, right? Don't you think he should have been more gushing over Karen than he is over her? I mean, it would have made us feel better.
Absolutely.
So, all during this episode, that's all we really see. I mean, it's a completely different Richard Kimball. He seems to be just in a daze. It's just like, and even the things she comes up with, well, let's do this and let's do that. And I'm thinking to myself, why is she coming up with these plans? What is wrong with you? Why aren't you staying in there saying?
I really wanted to see Donna toward the end of part one.
Oh, of course.
Why not have her? She's with Kimball.
Yeah.
She's looking for the clues.
Yeah.
She discovers this monumental mystery, and the whole audience can say, yes, all right, Donna, you know, Ron.
You just
want
to ogle Donna, Ken. That's all. It has nothing to do with the plot.
That's why I said earlier that Donna should be in it. Jean should not be in it at all. Because, well, of course, we would be much more interested, and it would make more sense that Kimball's acting the way he is. If he had called her just on the phone and said to her, Donna, you've got to help me. I've done this on my own for years now, but I'm exhausted. I'm mentally and physically beat. I can't go on any longer. You've got to help me. Now, you know, if Donna heard that, she'd go anywhere, fly anywhere, drive anywhere to help her brother. That brings her into the story because she knows now, for years now, she's let him wander around and hope for the best. But now if he calls her up and tells her, it's over, if somebody doesn't come up with something soon, I'm turning myself in, I just can't do it anymore, that would make all the difference in the world. Ken, don't you think it would have made it look a lot different?
I think a scene between Donna and the one-armed man privately.
Ah, yes.
That would have been great.
Of course.
How come I can write these stories, but these guys can't? Sheesh.
Well, one of the problems is that writers wrote the finale when fans should have written the finale.
Yeah.
People have been watching it all along, should have been the ones to really write it. Well, when we come back on our next show, we'll discuss my favorite part, which is the lack of a chase scene at the end, and I've been waiting 42 years to whine about that.
All right.
I can hardly wait to get there.
Well, if you've waited 42 years, you can wait another 4 weeks.
I'm not so sure. It's driving me crazy.
That is when the Jean Carlyle fan club will reassemble once again for a discussion of the judgment. I hope that you'll be back with us, too. That's going to be on February the 10th, Talking Fugitive, once again, here on Retro Radio.
Dreams have all gone, and never said where, but I think I know, it's miles through the night, just over the dawn, on the road that will take me home. I know in my underground.